on DAB Digital Radio, Digital TV, downloads and online.
This is 5 Live.
Andrew Collins is here. Today, Matthew, he's going to be Mark Kermode.
I'm always Mark Kermode when I'm in here, aren't I?
How are you?
I am. I'm fine.
Happy New Year to you.
And to Mark Kermode, wherever he is.
I wonder where he is. Well, he's probably listening, isn't he?
Somewhere nice.
That's generally what he does.
Yeah,
he listens, doesn't he, even when he's not on.
I know. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Mark. Now, busy New Year for you, because I'm surprised at the number of films that are out today. I would have thought it would have been quite quiet for
releases. Yeah, it's mad, and I'm covering those which came out on Boxing Day as well. So I've got a big old wad of films.
So from Boxing Day, we've got Australia.
Australia came out on Boxing Day, so did Yes Man. We'll find out where they are in the charts as well, because the first box office week will be in after Christmas. We're also going to look at The Reader, which is the hotly tipped Oscar film with Kate Winslet in it. We'll also look at Shea, Part 1. That's Shea Guevara, Part 1. Part 2 coming out in February. So if you like the first one, you should go and see the second. And we'll also do The Spirit, which actually I've been to see this morning because the film company couldn't quite show it to journalists before it came out. It's due to an administrative error, I'm sure. I interviewed Samuel Jackson and Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
For the film at a press junket, which I think everybody is fully aware of what a press junket is, where they send the press to a hotel and the actors sit in it for two days and answer the same questions. Well, none of us had seen any more than the kind of 6-minute clip of the film.
And just to explain to you how unusual that is, normally before Andrew or anyone goes to interview someone, it's stipulation from the companies that you have to have seen the film.
Oh, yeah. How can you possibly go along and talk about the film that you're advertising effectively by being there if you haven't seen it? And none of us had seen it. And Samuel Jackson, for one, he seemed pretty cross about the fact that he spent all day talking about a film that no one has seen. Now we've seen it. We've had to go and pay and see it, we journalists, but that's good for us.
And normally that only happens when the film's bobbins.
That's usually what happens, but I don't want to give the ending away. I don't want to give away my review this early on.
Excellent. OK, well, that's good then. A good crop of films to get your teeth into. And we'll start, after the news and sport, with the box office top 10 for the first week in 2009. Well, I suppose it won't be, will it? It'll be for the last
week. It'll be for the last week of the old year.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Don't split hairs with me. Andrew Collins is here to cast his eyes over the movie releases that came out on Boxing Day, and then the new movies from today too. We'll talk about those in more detail after we run through the box office top 10. So presume these figures for the last week in December, are they?
Yes, the week beginning Boxing Day. Okay. And off you go then, and I'll tell you what the films are. I haven't seen all of them, but it doesn't matter. I'll tell you what they are.
Okay, might be able to help you out.
Yeah.
At 10, The Tale of Despero.
Yeah, that's a bit of a Despero position in the top 10 for a quite high profile computer generated fairy story about a little mouse who's not scared of cats or carving knives. And he's Matthew Broderick. There are other great voices in it. There always are in these kind of animated things. Kevin Kline.
Whose is it? Is it a DreamWorks job?
It's actually one of the big studios. Not DreamWorks, and not, I think it's Universal, but certainly it's not your standard Pixar thing. But it looks very pretty. I mean, I've seen the trailers for it. It looks very nice. But in at number 10.
At 9, Four Christmases.
Yeah, well, it seems weird even to talk about a Christmas film now. It seems weird that it's still on, but it is Vince Vaughn and Reese Witherspoon, this year's Christmas movie. Christmas comedy, of course.
Is it rubbish?
It's just they have to go and see all four of their divorced parents, basically, and they're all playing people like, you know, Sissy Spacek, Robert Duvall, really good sort of cameo roles by old 70s stars. But obviously, it doesn't matter now. It came and it went. Who cares about a Christmas movie anymore?
Eight, Inkheart.
Imagine going to see the Christmas, it's still out. Imagine going to see it this week. What a weird and sad individual. It's like reading the Sunday papers on a Wednesday. Well, I see people reading the Sunday papers on a Wednesday. I think, put that down. Move on with your life.
It works for UK Gold, a very popular channel.
I love UK Gold, but yeah, you don't want to read the papers on a Wednesday. Inkheart is, there's two films in the top 10, which again, they're fantasy, they're aimed at the Christmas market, the holiday market. This time we're looking at basically Brendan Fraser, who has the power to make the characters in novels come alive, and that's basically your setup. There's another one of those later on in the chart.
At 7, I hope I pronounce this right, Gajini.
I imagine so. It's a Bollywood film starring Amir Khan. And in it, I haven't seen it, but in it, the character loses his memory and writes things on his body and takes Polaroids. Now that's the plot of Memento, isn't it? The Chris Nolan film that came out a few years ago. Now, I don't know whether that means, because this is a remake, whereas his plot was based on an old Bollywood film, or they've based their plot on his film. I have to look into that, because it's the same story, by the looks of it.
And again, difficult to get screenings of those Bollywood releases still.
Yeah. But if anyone has seen it, it'd be interested to know if they know anything more about it than I do.
Okay, if you've seen Gajini, then...
or even just know about it. Because it clearly is the same plot as Memento, which I thought was an original story that Chris Nolan had come up with. Anyway.
Phil at bbc.co.uk, or you can text 85058. At 6, The Day the Earth Stood Still,
yes.
Keanu Reeves.
A classic movie made in 1951 about a flying saucer that comes down. It's kind of a sort of a leftist pacifist, was accused of being a communist movie in 1951, has become a classic. And, of course, to prove how much modern Hollywood likes it, they've remade it and spoiled it. Not just by putting Keanu Reeves in, but Keanu Reeves, I have got quite a lot of time for, I must admit. I'm quite fond of him. He plays Klaatu. Do you remember the original, the 1950s original?
No.
He comes down, he comes in peace, basically, and they start firing at him, and he's basically come down to say, you should stop killing each other. It was a kind of pacifist message for the atomic age. There's no point in it now, really, in a way, but because they've redone it, so it's about environmental catastrophe. So they've kind of softened it up. Keanu plays Klaatu. I think that's probably why they got him to do it, because their names are quite similar. He could have just come out and said, I am Keanu from space.
At five, a film I'm going to see next week, so you might be able to save me the trouble if it's no good. Twilight.
Well, let me just check, because I'm not sure. How old are you?
34.
Don't go and see it, then.
Okay.
Because you're about twice as old as you should be to go and see it. I'd be interested to know what you think. It's set based on, apparently, a series of books. It's basically Buffy the Vampire Slayer, that kind of thing. Vampires and teen love combined. When they had the premiere for it, when I came through Leicester Square before Christmas, the premiere was on these screaming kids, screaming they were, at the star, who apparently is in one of the Harry Potter films. He played, I can't remember, a minor boy.
Yeah, this is Robert Pattinson.
That's him, yeah. They're mad for him, the kids. Mm. The kids were mad for him.
Well, so, these novels have done huge business in the States as well.
Yeah, so basically it's a whole world that I don't quite understand, but that doesn't make it bad.
Okay. It just probably makes us getting on a bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're a child compared to me, but you still, I don't think you should go and see it.
Okay. Tara, if you're listening, we're not going. At four...
I've ruined your social life. I don't mean to do that. You go. Don't ignore me. Go.
At four, a film I have seen, which I thoroughly enjoyed, right? Yeah. And I went to a screening of this at about 10 to 9 in the evening. No kids anywhere near it, right? Yeah. Madagascar Escape to Africa.
Brilliant. I love the Madagascar film, the original. These are really funny characters. They've got good voice artists. David Schwimmer. You know, they're good people.
Who
Ben
does
Stiller.
The Psycho Penguins?
The Penguins. Oh, do you know? I can't remember.
Is it Cedric the Entertainer?
Cedric the Entertainer, I think, is on the island. He's one of the he's one of the little, what are they called? The lemurs, isn't he? One of those.
And Bernie Mac does voices for these as well.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a great, I mean, it's just a great franchise. I really love it. You like this, it's got bendy, it's a bendy style. It's not for everyone's taste, but I think the bendy style that they're done is very good.
Now, at three, a film you're going to review in more detail.
We will,
so maybe don't give the game away, but Australia.
Well, I think you can't avoid it, and it's come out on Boxing Day, and it's an epic, sort of pre-packaged, boil-in-the-bag epic. Everything about it is epic. The poster is epic. The title is epic.
The length.
It's just, you can just tell it's going to be an epic. It's gone in at number three. You don't need to be an expert on film to know that's not quite what Baz Luhrmann and the studio had in mind for it to go in at number three.
I interviewed Baz Luhrmann and Hugh Jackman for this programme about that, so I'll tell you what they had to say about that.
I love Baz Luhrmann, but I did anyway.
Talk about the film. Two, Bedtime Stories. This is Adam Sandler.
Yeah, it's about time we had a fantasy film based on somebody reading stories and things coming alive. That's what happens in this as well. So you've got Brendan Fraser doing it, but Adam Sandler doing it slightly more popular in the Walt Disney version of the same kind of style. Yeah, and you know, if you like Adam Sandler, that is. I don't really like him that much, I must admit.
So the number one film
for
the last week in December, based on part-time Five Live presenter Danny Wallace's book, this is Yes Man.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way he'll be coming back here now, surely. That's him done now. He'll be helicoptered around by staff, because this is it's done very well for him. This is it's a brilliant book, actually. Have you read his book?
No.
It's a great idea. Danny Wallace writes these kind of ideas books where he does them. He goes through with them in the kind of Dave Gorman style. He decided to say yes to every question that was asked of him because he'd split up and he was depressed and staying in and wouldn't go out. And he tells the story in his book, and it's very English, and who knew it could become a Hollywood film? But it is a great concept. It's a great pitch, isn't it? So Jim Carrey comes along. He plays a depressed bloke. Clearly, it's not set in England anymore, and he's not Danny Wallace anymore. But nevertheless, Jim Carrey, at least in the first half, is actually quite refreshing to see him not gurning because he's depressed. Then he agrees to say yes to everything. There's a slightly hokey thing they've added to it where he goes to a kind of self-help seminar, which is more like a religious thing, and Terence Stamp appears as a kind of guru and says, you must say yes, and he does. But he's actually very entertaining.
Is it okay?
Yeah, it is. And I'm not a big fan of Jim Carrey at his worst, you know, and he's most excessive, but he's actually reasonably sort of nailed down in this one. And if you like Flight of the Conchords, then you'll know Rhys Darby, who plays the manager in that, and he steals the film. And Jim Carrey, I think, generously allows him to steal the film. He just plays this kind of weird, nerdy boss, Jim Carrey's weird, nerdy boss, and who happens to be from New Zealand. And it's worth seeing just for him, actually. Superb performance by Rhys Darby. He'll clearly go on to greater things, I think, in Hollywood.
A text for you from Paul in Cambridge. Saw Twilight, Phil. I'm 45 years old. My wife and I loved it, as did our adult children.
Great. There you go. Disproves my theory.
Derry said... I thought the critics were unduly sniffy about Australia. It was a true epic weepy and superbly photographed. Yes, it had faults, and one could nitpick ad infinitum, but what a great escape for a couple of hours. Well, Derry, try 2 hours, 45 minutes.
Yeah, 165 minutes. I would dispute that just on my own personal view. We don't need to do Yes Man. We've covered Yes Man, but Australia was the other film that some might say was sort of shoved in through the back door on Boxing Day. It's a funny time to release a film, Boxing Day. But anyway, they did.
They come out on Christmas Day in America, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether... I would never go and see a film on Boxing Day. I'd sit and watch one at home, but I don't know whether I'd actually go out and see one. But anyway, Australia, I saw it in a very big screening in a big West End cinema, so it wasn't just surrounded by critics. Yeah, well, you see, critics... If you see things with just critics, you can't really get a feel for it, which is why I spend an awful lot of time going to see films at the cinema. And this, I won't count as a screening in that sense, because it was a full cinema of people. And it's a love story, effectively, between Nicole Kidman and Hugh Jackman. And he's a rough-handed cattle drover called Drover, and she's an aristocrat. In this, Nicole Kidman plays Hoity and Toity, so it shows her entire acting range. And even though it's a big Australian movie directed by Baz Luhrmann, it's his Gone with the Wind. That was his idea. This is going to be my Gone with the Wind. Unfortunately, it's his Pearl Harbor. And it's his Pearl Harbor in both senses, the film and the unfortunate event that took place in 1941, because it's a romantic love story set against fantastic Northern Territory backdrops. You can't beat it. I agree that it looks brilliant. Your texter is absolutely right. It does look amazing. But then all you've got to do basically is point a camera at this stuff, and it is going to be amazing, isn't it? So I don't think that completely holds the attention for 165 minutes. We can hear Nicole Kidman's excellent English accent. Why you don't get an English actress to do an English part, I don't know. But anyway, he obviously had a favour that he owed her. So we'll hear in this clip when she arrives, basically, this aristocratic woman at a cattle ranch, which she owns, which this man we're going to hear, he's the station manager. You can't quite hear his waxed moustache twirling, but he's a bad guy. And he basically wants Faraway Downs, which is the name of this cattle ranch. He wants it. And we'll hear him explaining what's gone on to Nicole Kidman in this clip.
My family has had the honour of serving the owners of Faraway Downs for three generations. We know how hard this land can be. But Lord Maitland Ashley, he never gave up. The only thing that could stop this decent and courageous man was a spear from a murderous black, the so-called King George, and he will be brought to justice. Let us now pray for Maitland Ashley, that his soul may enter peacefully through the gates of heaven. Lady Ashley, we can leave for Darwin first thing in the morning.
Yes, Mr. Fletcher. Watch the window. I can't understand what my husband would have seen out here.
Yeah, this land has a strange power.
It does have a strange power, this land, the power to bore. I thought Baz Luhrmann's previous films were fantastic. I really loved Moulin Rouge. I thought Moulin Rouge was just terrific. And not everybody's taste, lovers of old-fashioned musicals, felt it was a little bit iconoclastic, but I loved it. And I thought, Baz Luhrmann, why not? I absolutely, right behind him, the ambition to go make a film about Australia called Australia, that's 165 minutes long, and it's a love story, it's a war movie, it's a western, effectively, because they have to drive all this cattle all the way to Darwin, so the middle section is just basically a long cattle drive, during which, surprise, surprise, not giving anything away, the hoity-toity English lady starts to fall for the rough-handed cattle drover. Anyway, you know romance is going to occur. And there's a weird Aboriginal subplot, because they look after a half-caste child, and there's a bit of that going on, a bit of sort of missionary guilt. And that's not really done in a very noble way, I don't think, because they basically just stick this Aborigine bloke on the top of a mountain whenever they want to prove that the Aborigines are kind of a bit mystical. And just there he is, standing on one leg on a mountain. You go, wow. So, yes, I think it's a disaster on every level, actually. I think the Pearl Harbor bit at the end, the Japanese bombed Darwin. Having done Pearl Harbor, they basically dropped the rest of the bombs on Darwin. So he gets his own Australian Pearl Harbor, and unfortunately the symbolism is too great.
Sat next to me at the screening was an Australian woman who I didn't know.
A woman!
Right. And we struck up conversation, mostly because she was trying to skank some of my pick and mix. And I said to her, do you have high hopes for this? Have you heard much about it? And she said, I won't do the accent, but she said, I'm really petrified as to what Baz Luhrmann's done to my home country.
Yeah, right? Well, quite right.
However, 2 hours, 20 minutes in, she was sobbing her eyes out.
Right, fair enough. So a hardened Australian woman.
I just wonder if it is
this film.
For the female demographic.
There are three points in the film which are supposed to be big, dramatic, romantic moments where the audience that I was with laughed, and you were there, so you can see this. They laughed. It was supposed to be a serious moment, and that's when I wondered if maybe it was camp and ironic and I was missing the point. Now, that's still possible. But I actually think that he's overreached himself, unfortunately.
I've seen you do camp, and you do it very well.
Yeah. I think it's... some people are kind of excusing it, saying it's a woman's picture, it's camp, it's ironic. I don't take any of that on board, personally.
Right, Alison has sent an email saying you don't like Australia so much because you're a man.
See, there you go.
I sat through all 2 hours, 45 minutes, and I still would have watched more. Let's have more women film critics.
The thing is, I am the least blokey man that I know. I'm not that kind of man that likes man's films. I spend all year watching costume dramas. That's what I like. You know, so I'm not a sort of bloke who expects films to be about football and explosions. I don't care. I don't even like football that much. So I understand what you mean, and I agree there should be more women.
We've only got
critics.
5 minutes left, so let's just do John's email, and then you can tell us which film you'd like to talk about next.
Yes.
John has written a rather constructive email here. Australia, too long by at least an hour. That's according to my wife. I maintain it's too long by its length. Dreadful in every aspect, says John. To my finer emotions, it tried every trick to appeal to my finer emotions in the same way that Rambo attempts to appeal to my base emotions. Neither succeeded, says John. Yeah. I do understand it was cut rather quickly, but it's a dreadful film, only beaten by Titanic and Angela's Ashes.
You see, I like Titanic. So there you go. And that's is that a woman's picture? I like that. Of the three films that are out today, I suppose The Reader might be considered the most of a woman's picture. Since we haven't got much time, we'd probably best not play the clips in. But if we did do the clip, it will be Kate Winslet playing a woman who turns out to have been an SS guard at Auschwitz. That's the thing that occurs in the middle. This is apparently okay because the company gave us the clip to show that.
We can hear this one.
Let's hear it. It explains who she is.
This is a tip to get Oscar nominations.
Everybody's mad for this film except for Peter Bradshaw at The Guardian.
My name is Hannah Schmidt.
Thank you. You were born on October 21st, 1922?
Yes.
At Hammerstadt. And you're now 43 years old?
Yes.
You joined the SS in 1943?
Yes.
What was your reason for joining?
Oh, objection.
I rephrase my question. I'm trying to ascertain if she joined the SS freely, of her own free will.
I heard there were jobs.
Go on.
I was working at Siemens when I heard the SS was recruiting.
Did you know the kind of work you'd be expected to do?
They were looking for guards. I applied for a job.
And you worked first at Auschwitz?
Yes.
So, basically, that's the setup of the film. It begins, though, with, before we know this about her, she has an affair with a 15-year-old boy. That's what the first part is about. So if that, you know, you get the hots for a 15-year-old boy, and they have sort of sexy time, and he reads to her, because it turns out she can't read. So, basically, that leads up to the modern day, where Ralph Fiennes plays the boy all grown up, and I won't tell you what happens at the end, clearly, but it's a lot of it set in flashback. So you get a bit of sort of tasteful sex with a 15-year-old boy, and then you get this weird stuff.
Tasteful sex with a 15-year-old boy.
All right. Tastefully done
tastefully
sex.
Shot scenes.
Yes.
Is what you more meant, I
also
think.
The actor's not actually 15, he's 18, so it's okay. But anyway, that's what it's supposed to be, kind of controversial. It's based on a book, the only German book ever to become the best selling book on the New York Times bestseller list. So, but what worries me about it, it's a German story, it's about dealing with the past and this particular horrible bit of the past, and it's written by a German, and yet the film is basically a British film. It stars British people, directed by a British director, written by a British writer. So I can't understand why it's not a German film. It should be a German film. The Germans are making brilliant films at the moment. Why are they not making this film? That's my question. It's a very, very tasteful film.
Is it any good?
It's okay. It's very slow. And I like the fact that it's kind of intelligent, talky, slow film. I want that. But why have we made it?
Tell us about The Spirit.
The Spirit. Don't go and see this. I'm afraid I saw it this morning. I was delighted to meet Samuel Jackson and Scarlett Johansson and not talk about it because I hadn't seen it. I've now seen it. It doesn't work. It's Frank Miller doing basically a graphic novel on screen, a bit like Sin City. And it's just hour and a half, but you can't get involved because they're just pictures. They're real actors against green screen with pictures drawn on afterwards. You can't get involved.
And Shea Part 1, Benicio del Toro?
Totally involved in this. Brilliant film. A two-part. Each part is 2 hours long about Shea. Basically, this part ends with him coming through the jungle and basically taking over.
Is it going to get a wide release?
Yeah, it is, because it's made by Steven Soderbergh, but it's all in Spanish. It's a fantastic thing for a great big modern director like Steven Soderbergh to do. He does Ocean's 12 and he does this. Good.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.